back on Janet Mefford today. It was the ancient philosopher Plato who believed that the good, the true, and the beautiful are celestial and yet inseparable ideas. And he argued in favor of the objectivity of such values. Now, Christians also have embraced these ideals, knowing that they are rooted in the very nature of God. But we're living in a very unobjective age at the moment, a time in which relativism guides much of man's thinking about what it even means to be human. And this is unfortunately carried over into education. How can you educate a new generation properly if it is not interacting with these concepts of the good, the true, and the beautiful? So joining me now is Dr. Steve Turley. He teaches theology, Greek, and rhetoric at Tall Oaks Classical School in Newcastle, Delaware, and he is professor of fine arts at Eastern University. Today we're going to be talking about his book. It is called Awakening Wonder, A Classical Guide to Truth, Goodness, and Beauty. Dr. Turley, it's great to have you here. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Janet, for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Now, this is interesting. This will, I think, stretch people's minds a little bit, just remembering Plato's involvement with this particular concept. But take us back a little bit to the time of Plato and what he believed about the true, the good, and the beautiful.
Yeah, it is a different world from the world we're living in today. I loved your introduction. For Plato, the world could be summarized in a wonderful phrase that scholars use called cosmic piety. It's this idea that the world is filled with divine meaning and purpose. And what that means is that every person born into the world is born into a world of divine obligation. We're obliged to conform our lives into a harmonious relationship with that divine meaning and purpose.
Right.
And we understand that meaning and purpose through primarily three ways: the true, the good, and the beautiful. Truth communicates divine meaning and purpose to my intellectual capacities. Goodness communicates divine meaning and purpose to my moral capacities. And beauty communicates divine meaning and purpose to my aesthetic and my emotional capacities. And for Plato, he saw these objective values as absolutely necessary to bring those three aspects of our souls into a balance with one another. We all know people who are all intellect, but no feeling, no emotion, the most Mr. Spocks of the world.
Right.
We all know people who are all emotion and no thinking. I won't mention any names there, but... For Plato, he wanted to see how do we get the intellect and the emotional side of the human person in balance. And you do so by encountering this perfectly balanced cosmic values of truth, goodness, and beauty. And you know that balance has occurred in the soul by their fruit, by their ethical life. By their fruit you shall know them. So virtue became central to the educational project of Plato. And so truth, goodness, and beauty are cosmic values that communicate divine meaning to the intellectual, moral, and aesthetic capacities of the human soul, which brings a balance in the soul, which in turn harmonizes the human person with that divine meaning and purpose of the cosmos, which was considered the prerequisite to human flourishing.
Wow. Now, when you consider what Plato's ideals were all about and how he would implement those, it strikes me, and it strikes you as well in your book, that we are living in very different times than Plato's times. What would you say the big difference was between the context in which he was living and the context in which we are living now?
Yeah, the huge difference is the change in cosmology. For Plato, we lived in a divine world, but we're living in a world that's been cut off from that divine meaning and purpose. Today, we're living in a world solely defined in terms of biological, chemical, physical causal laws.
Right.
And as a result, the divine meaning and purpose that was once thought of as embedded in the world has been relocated purely to subjective processes, mere private belief, personal preference. And so now truth is whatever I want it to be. Goodness is situational. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And this is because largely we're living in a time where we believe science reveals to us reality, And faith is something that is merely personal and private.
Yes, for sure. So now when you go from Plato to the time of the early Christians, how did Christians understand historically these concepts of truth, goodness, and beauty? Because certainly these would be attributes rooted in the divine nature of God.
That's right. And that's exactly how they catch them up into the Christian gospel, but then they allow the gospel to do its transforming work and radically alter these concepts too. So Christians certainly affirm that all people are born into a world of divine obligation, but they introduce something wholly new by transcribing this cosmic piety away from the gods and the planets and the celestial spheres, you know, the worship of creation that Paul talks about in Romans 1.
Right.
And instead they impute it solely onto Christ, who's the Logos, the new creation, the one in whom all things hold together,
yes,
the one through whom God is revealed as the infinite fountain of Trinitarian love and delight.
Absolutely.
And there's this also this radical recalibration of creation and the human person. So for Plato, the material world and the physical body were in fact impediments to experiencing the true, the good, and the beautiful. But for Christians, the human soul was firmly fixed within the goodness of creation,
right,
and it was inextricably linked to the physical body. And instead of getting rid of the physical cosmos, which is what Plato wanted to do, Christians affirm that Christ restored paradise. He brought paradise back into our midst. And so you see the cross as the tree of life restored, and the rivers of Eden are seen as recovered in the waters of baptism. The grain and fruit of the third day of creation are transformed into the bread and wine identified with the body and blood of Christ, so that creation and incarnation come together to restore a relationship with God and with one another, and hence perpetuate the life of the world in a new creation.
Wow.
So Christians, they really draw in all of this truth, goodness, and beauty, but they radically alter it by having it center around Christ.
So kind of shaking off the Gnostic sensibility.
Oh, you bet.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're firmly physical creatures. We belong in creation. Creation is good, and it is holistic. Behold, I make all things new.
How did we lose this, would you say, especially in education? Because historically, when you go back in particular strains of education especially, there was this idea that that was the purpose of education, to pursue the true, the beautiful, and the good. What happened? What exactly happened to us?
There's a number of things that go on. It takes a few hundred years to work itself out. But bottom line, I think knowledge changed. Our conception of knowledge changed. I believe it's a contradictory change, but nevertheless it happened. And that's the idea that the only way I can really know is through some kind of scientific, empirical verification. Everything else is mere private opinion and personal preference. And you combine that with the rise of the Industrial Revolution and the rise of secular statism that's regulating that Industrial Revolution, and then reinstituting a new education that's more interested in creating workers and skills than it is wisdom and virtue, you're going to have a complete different paradigm shift. I think C.S. Lewis summed it up beautifully when he said, the classical imagination had an education that answered the question, how do I conform my soul to the divine meaning and purpose around me? And the answer was through wisdom and virtue. Modern education answers a very different question. It answers the question, how do I conform this meaningless, purposeless nature to my own desires and ambitions? And the answer is through tapping into those institutions that operate by the mechanisms of coercion, namely science, technology, and the state. Think of the STEM subjects, for example.
Right, absolutely.
And so all the aspirations that we once longed for, the true, the good, and the beautiful, they in effect disappear in this new educational project, because no one's asking that question. How do we conform our souls to that divine meaning and purpose of the created order around us?
Very important. We're going to come back to the discussion. Dr. Steve Turley, Awakening Wonder. We'll be back on Janet Mefford Today. We are back. Thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Steve Turley is my guest. We're discussing his book. It's called Awakening Wonder, A Classical Guide to Truth, Goodness, and Beauty. And boy, have times changed. If you go back to the ancient philosopher Plato, as we've been discussing, you saw this concept of truth, goodness, and beauty being such an important transcendent trio of values that should be pursued. And Christians also picked up on this theme to a greater degree, rooted in the incarnation of Christ and the Trinity. But today, all bets are off, and my guest has pointed out very well, Dr. Turley, I think that our conception of knowledge really has changed. And what would you say have been the after effects of negating this idea that wisdom and virtue is an important part of education?
Well, it's devastating, and it's holistic. It's systemic in terms of our society, because we have bought into the idea that knowledge needs to be sequestered from what the classical imagination would have brought it together with. So we make these dichotomies of fact versus faith, knowledge versus belief, science versus religion.
Right.
And so the result now is that you can believe whatever you want when it comes to God and gender and increasingly race and you name it. You can believe whatever you want. You can believe God is Jesus Christ. You can believe God is a pickle. It doesn't matter.
Right.
But you walk into a science or math classroom and you're going to be confronted with absolute and unquestionable reality. That's the necessary prerequisite for cultivating skills that can then be used to increase economic growth. And we need economic growth in this sense in order to more effectively conform reality to our own desires and ambitions. C.S. Lewis said it very well. Classical education sought to cultivate wisdom and virtue. Modern education seeks to cultivate workers and skills. And Lewis reminds us in the classical world that virtue was for the free man, skills was for the slave.
Oh, boy, that is very telling, especially applied in our own day. But, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned C.S. Lewis. One of his famous works is The Abolition of Man. And what would you say is the connection between this rise of relativism and the loss of what it means to be human? Because that's something a lot of Christians especially have remarked upon, the fact that man is losing his unique identity in all of this, the way things have changed.
That's right. It's Lewis is very profound. This is a fantastic resource for your listeners, The Abolition of Man. Peter Kraft calls it probably the best book written in the 20th century on the modern age,
which is
saying something from Peter Kraft.
Yes.
And in under 80 pages, Lewis does this fantastic job. His major concern is that this modern turn that we've taken away from the transcendent values of truth, goodness, and beauty inevitably reduced the human person to mere nature. And he was very concerned about this, because if the modern project is about conforming nature to our own desires and ambitions, and if we then realize that humans are basically nature, then we can start manipulating humans.
Yeah, sure.
And if those Planned Parenthood videos don't prove that, I don't know what could possibly.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. Well, now, when you look at the classical model, for example, which has been very much embraced by Christians in the last, I don't know, couple of decades for sure, there is this resurgence of interest in doing a better job of educating and incorporating these values of truth, goodness, and beauty that rooted in the Trinity, rooted in the incarnation of Christ. What does that look like, though, in the classroom? What is the difference between the way the secularist would instruct a child in the classroom and the way a classical educator would do it?
Oh, that's great. Yeah, again, for the classical Christian educator, we're starting from the premise that there is a fall.
Yeah, what a concept.
Right, yeah, there's been a fall. And the soul has been disordered, and not just the soul, either the body, the senses as well. The whole human person has been cast out of paradise. And so the human, in order to be truly human, we have to be, in a way, rightly put back together. And so through the grace of God that comes to us through church and sacraments, His Word, we then, as an extension of that, begin cultivating the process of virtue formation that was lost in the garden. And central virtue, of course, is trusting in all the promises and provisions of God, thereby glorifying him as creator and redeemer, which frees us up to consider the needs of others as more important than our own, loving God, loving neighbor, fulfilling the law.
Right.
So we'll focus on cultivating a moral imagination. The imagination here is seen as the integrative center for that that logical, that intellectual, moral, and aesthetic sensibilities that truth, goodness, and beauty awaken. And we'll focus on a tradition that's called the redemption of the senses, which is which sees the senses as having fallen along with the soul, and so they need to be retrained, reoriented away from the carnal and the sensual and toward the eternally true good and the beautiful. And so the purpose then of literature, art, architecture, music, and poetry is about sanctifying the senses and preparing the body for its future resurrection when Christ returns. Very different than modern education. Modern education is going to teach you, it's going to perpetuate the idea that science and math are facts, everything else is faith. Science and math are knowledge, everything else is belief. Science gives us a true understanding of the world. Religion is a personal, private thing that does not belong in the public square. That's what modern education perpetuates.
Oh, it does. And what is the end result of all of this? You get metal detectors in schools.
Absolutely.
And you have character for, you know, character formation classes alongside Planned Parenthood sex ed.
You got
But you end up not teaching children how to think. In the final analysis, and not teaching children really in the final analysis how to have good moral character, because that really in the, it really communicates to the next generation that you are something more than just a blob of cells, which is seems to come up against the secularist mentality these days.
Absolutely, you got it. I love Paul's call in Romans 12:1-2. Off your bodies as living sacrifices. There's those sanctified senses, as it were.
Okay.
And don't be conformed to the pattern of the world, but be renewed, right, by the transfiguration of the mind. The
yes.
body and the soul together are caught up in this redeeming, glorious grace of Christ. And if it's not being drawn up into that grace, it's going to go into a counterfeit gospel. Mm-hmm. And our counterfeit gospel today is the modern secular age.
Oh, for sure. That's well said. Now, one of the things that you talk about is getting students to really awaken wonder. This is playing off your title. In this field of aesthetics, what are you talking about? You had talked about that a little bit, referring back to Plato. But what is your objective here when you're trying to get students to think about life aesthetically?
Yeah, we're trying to get them, the whole idea of aesthetics is the idea, you know, the contemplation of art and beauty. And even just that term, contemplation, is a beautiful term. It comes from the Latin contemplare, meaning thinking thoughts associated with a temple, contemplare.
Hmm.
It's a very sacred, consecrated thoughts. And what you're doing is you're teaching students to begin to look at the totality of the created order as just that, a divine arena of God's glory. And that's one of the hardest things today for the modern mind, to see the world in many ways like a metaphor.
Yeah.
And so what we'll do is we'll train them to read stories as pointing to a wider story. So we'll get them to, for example, read Sleeping Beauty. And what's Sleeping Beauty? Well, it's about a prince who comes, slays a dragon, rescues his bride, and raises her to life. Well, wait a minute now. We've read that before, haven't we? or Pinocchio is a story of transfiguration.
Yeah.
The Little Mermaid is about the quest for eternal life. They learn to see sports, as Paul saw it in 1 Corinthians 9, as a way of developing self-control and self-mastery and virtue. They look at science as a way of studying not just creation, but even through chemistry and biology, the very body that Christ incarnated and is preparing for its total transfiguration when he returns. So it's beginning to look at the totality of life around them as divine images of God's glory.
Wow. And what a difference that makes in the final analysis, because that is the truth. And
exactly.
This is a great book. It's called Awakening Wonder, A Classical Guide to Truth, Goodness, and Beauty. Dr. Steve Turley joining us today. And it was wonderful to have you. Thank you so much, Dr. Turley.
Thank you, Janet, so much.
Oh, thank you again for being with us. We appreciate your listening today. Hope you can join us next time. Our website is janetmefford.com. Thanks a lot for listening. God bless.